We're going to get started. I mentioned somebody submitted questions. I'm not going to say his name again, but his questions were, there were a lot of them, and they all had a central theme to them. Here's what they are. He started by saying, remember you told the story of how you had lost your passion to ski. I'm going to read these. Well, how do you rekindle your passion? Your spirit is what he wrote. And then he wrote, how can I rediscover the juice in life? Notice if these resonate with you. How do I deal with loss and failure? I have fear of aging and settling for, well, I guess this is all I have to offer when I know there's more, but I'm tiptoeing towards the finish line. How can I gain clarity and have the courage to take bold steps? How can I negotiate my dreams with a partner who is insecure? What's behind my propensity to quit? Who is the one who is scattered and grasping for a Hail Mary pass? How do I move beyond stuck, stagnant, numb on autopilot? Now, lots of compelling questions. And the overall theme that I saw in these questions was that he felt disappointment, passionless, like he wanted to quit. He was feeling very numb, operating on autopilot, that kind of things, held back by himself and other people. Notice if this is you too, that you're just feeling like this is just not the life that I wanted. And I know that I'm going through that myself as well. So I love that you brought these questions up. And to answer these questions, like, what do you do about these kinds of, I mean, I would say that these are personal questions, right? Like of dissatisfaction, and I'm just not feeling really psyched about where I am right now. And there's a lot of books out there. There's a lot of books that I'm in, actually. There's one that just came out called The Art of Impossible that Stephen Kotler wrote. And I mean, it's a great book. I recommend it. A lot of what's in there is a lot of repackaging of the same old things that we expect to get as an answer for these kinds of burning questions. Grit, for example, determination. My joke is like putting on the Rocky theme music and drinking two cans of Red Bull and giving it everything you've got, saying, I can do it, whatever it is, right? I can take charge of my life. I can accomplish what I want to. I'm not going to be a victim to life. Like, I'm going to take charge, right? And that is maybe what the person who asked me these questions is expecting me to respond, because we've all heard it before. And it's a really, I mean, there's a lot of merit to that answer. And there really are two choices of how to deal with your life when you're disappointed. And that's one, all that I've just outlined, that's one way to deal with it. Let me just turn my phone off real quick because it's chirping at me. That's one way to deal with it. And go all in on grit and determination and all that. Or there's what I suggest, which is very, very different than what else you're going to find out there. And maybe the reason why you signed up for this work with me is because you know that this is what I teach, you know that it's different. And this is more for me about diving into the cesspool of the suck, right? Just like, oh, my life sucks right now. And have that river take you to the next level of your development. Now, that may or may not include accomplishment as you know it, though. Like, where the river of the suck is going to take you may not be to having success in your business or success in your marriage or what have you. As you guys know, that I'm going through a divorce, and I am also going through medical issues from a car accident. Both my cats have died. My mother has dementia and probably isn't going to last very much longer. Like, I am going through the worst year of my life. And I could like try to put a smile on my face and you know, climb out of the chasm that I'm in, or I can dive into the river of it. And I, of course, being a practitioner of Zen, and you know what I teach, right? I have dove into the river of suck. You know, there's actually a podcast. Hi, Andy, if you're on the call, called The River of Suck. And I love that podcast because it just really captures the Zen life, like diving into all the torture that I'm going through for the last year. And what has happened, especially from being rejected by my husband and just all of a sudden finding myself alone, even though I felt like I was a really good wife, is that it's made me very humble. You know, I have a lot more humility. You know, my own humility of being broken, but it's like I'm in the swirling river of my pain and my suffering and my confusion. And it's like I'm getting bounced around on the rocks and I become battered and bruised by this. But what happens is that I'm coming through this experience forever changed. I'm reading a book right now. Actually, I have it right here. I'm reading it because I'm a big fan of Dr. Phil, and he said it's the best book he ever read. And so I ordered it immediately when I heard him say that. It's called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And it's about his experience of being a doctor. He lived in Auschwitz. And one thing that's also coming up for me, I kind of captured in this book, was that was just fascinating, is that, you know, the people in Auschwitz, they were just crammed in these tiny little areas, and they had to sleep on one side, you know, because there wasn't room for them to turn over, sleeping on hard beds, sleeping next to people that are snoring really loud. And even the lightest of sleepers prior learned how to sleep, or not even learn, but just naturally slept great, or because they were so exhausted, for starters, even next to, you know, somebody that's snoring really loud. Now, I have long been a very light sleeper, and one thing that's happening is that I'm not so affected by little chirps and noises that wake people up in the middle of the night. It's like, this is my own, not to compare what I'm going through. Divorce is pretty horrible, but it's not even scratching the surface of the horrors of Auschwitz. But, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, we are forever changed by our suffering. And the suffering doesn't have to be as severe as Auschwitz. It can be as severe as divorce. It can be as severe as losing a cat. It can be as, I mean, these are all different levels, but what happens is that you find meaning and purpose and just connection to yourself, and you become forever changed through work, through love, and according to Viktor Frankl, through your own suffering. But only if you embrace your suffering can it change you. And some of the other things that have changed for me is that I no longer care as much about what people think of me, because I've been in the river of suck and I've embraced my own suffering and just let it take me there. It's like, I didn't force this. I didn't try to not care about what people think of me. It's just the side effect of all the suffering that I'm going through. Another thing that's happening is I no longer have I used to have really high expectations of other people in the world. I no longer have those high expectations. I'm like, okay with what I get more. I've become a really relaxed kind of chill person. I don't, you know, if I had some workers that were supposed to show up at the house yesterday and they didn't show up and they've been supposed to show up for 3 months. And I'm just like, oh, well, whatever. And it's kind of like Victor talked about actually in the book, even after he was liberated from Auschwitz, he had this disillusionment with life, where you no longer have the illusion of how you want life to be, or the illusion of how you think you are. It's like you completely break down all beliefs and stories and perceptions. I mean, it feels like a breakdown, right? But it's also simultaneously a spiritual awakening. And you hear people all the time, you know, joke that, oh, I thought I was having a spiritual awakening, but realized I was going insane. I was going mentally insane. Well, they're kind of the same thing, you know? It's like fully waking up to realizing how just insane life is, and just going into the depths of your own hell and your own illusions and delusions, and what you think you want isn't actually what you want after all, and who you thought you were married to isn't who you were married to after all, and who you are as a person isn't who you are after all. So that's what happens when you dive into the river of suck. This is where you truly come to terms with what life is all about. And life is not about happy, joy, or success, or fulfillment, or being even happily married. And it's not about fear or pain or suffering. It really is, I'm learning fully, completely, by diving into the river of suck. It's about being real and raw and just sitting with what is and looking in the mirror and not looking away, you know. And maybe you like what you see, but maybe you also see sagging skin or hair that's getting thinner or drier, and it's harder and harder to stay in shape. And I look at people, I have my niece, she's 19 years old, and she's so filled with vibrancy and aliveness and excitement. And she's just coming into form and her dreams are just so alive and well. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for her. And I remember being her, and I have had a magical life, but at the same time, this is not right now where I want my life to be. And the person that asks these questions isn't either. And maybe when you think about your own life, like, is it what you want it to be? Is it what your fantasy was when you were 19 years old? Maybe, maybe not. But what happens when you embrace your suffering, you know, when you are embrace your suffering like this man did. And for me, my suffering right now is just my aloneness. Having been a beautiful woman my whole life, just becoming more and more invisible. And now my dreams are different, right? I'm retreating into myself, and I'm finally, through my suffering, much like Victor did, finding myself finally and truly evolving to the next level of my development. And for those of you that have worked with me, you've heard me talk about the four stages of ego development. And ego development, a lot of people get stuck in stage four. I'm going to go over these in just a moment. But this river of suck that I'm in is what's taking me to the next level of my development, like moving me beyond stage four. And this is where our dreams, you know, that we had maybe when we were 19, or the dreams that we're still harboring now, even though they're kind of not working out, this is where our dreams take on a different meaning. So I want to go over the four stages of ego development, and I'm going to paraphrase them. And this comes from Ken Wilber. He's brilliant. He's a spiritual intellect. Stage one is when you're a baby. There's no separate sense of I. Stage two is when you start coming into form. As a separate egoic being, a separate sense of I gets developed. You have a real me perspective, very self-absorbed. Stage three is in adolescence. A lot of tribe identification. This is why teenagers want to be a part of a group, you know, and that they don't want to be an outcast. That's why it feels so horrible. Like, they want to wear the same jeans and have the same haircut because they don't want to be an outcast. And those of you that work with me privately, it has been my big thing lately to go over these four stages, because it explains so much. It's like, what is this journey that we're on? And so back to the person that asked the questions, and if you're asking the same questions in your own life, listen to these stages from this point on, because we're all adults here. And stage four is where I feel like a lot of these questions may have been asked. And I think that they were also triggered by a desire to go to stage five and even stage six. So this is the reason why I'm bringing this up, to answer these questions that were asked. Stage four is called the highest form of adult development, and 80% of the population lives here. The most successful people in the world live here and are stuck here, and because higher education is focused on getting us here. This is where you're rewarded for achievement, power, success, money, he who has the most toys wins. And ultimately, your self-esteem at stage four is about accomplishing your own personal goals. Like, your self-esteem is about accomplishment, whether your business is successful, whether your relationship is successful, that kind of thing. There's a desire in this place of wanting to fix problems, and you become very analytical. And at stage four, the bad news is you're furthest away from source than you will ever be. You're not really tapped into intuition. How can you tell when you're here? Well, there's a lot of self-criticism. And I don't think that these questions that were submitted really were super critical, but there's a tinge of self-criticism in there, like, oh, why have I not accomplished what I want to accomplish? What's the Talking Heads song? This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful life. So the voice of the self-critic comes in stage four. Now note, these stages are a development process that can't be rushed. And I really want you to remember that as we continue down this rabbit hole. You have to go through all the stages. It's not linear. But as we move on, and in many ways, these monthly check-ins are about moving beyond stage four ego development. So pay attention. Stage four, shifting to five, comes after a deepening sense that there must be more to life. And this stage showed up for the first time ever in the 60s. I mean, raise your hand if you ever watched Mad Men. I watched Mad Men, Don Draper. Like, it's all about money, achievement, accomplishment prior to age 60s or the 60s. And then the 60s kick in and all the hippies show up and it's like love and peace and, you know, the sexual liberation. Like, there's just like a desire for something more. So this is very new. Like, this is not something that was around prior to the 60s, moving beyond stage four ego development. Here's where you finally see how much you've been socialized to behave a certain way by parents, by society. You really start redefining yourself and who you want to be. This is when people get really into yoga and they want to try to link the mind and body connection. So some voices that I would do here are the voice of internal seeking and awareness of your delusion, which is really the first stage of a Zen life, because ultimately when monks meditate in a monastery for their entire lives, all that they're trying to do by meditating for 50 years is to wake up and realize their own delusion. Stage five is where you're all about self-development, fulfillment, awakening. Start to live more in the moment. You acknowledge your emotions, right? Which is what I'm all about. More tolerant and spontaneous than any age before. When we're in stage five ego development, I will say that people have no idea how to handle us. Like, we go to a party and they say, how have you been? I just had my boots fit yesterday. And the boot fitter said, how have you been? I'm like, terrible. And I start to tell him, you know, how I've been feeling lately. And I could tell he really didn't know what to do with me. And so when we're in stage five ego development, if somebody else is not a seeker and not on that journey, either their eyes glaze over or they're like, oh my gosh. And I, of course, felt uncomfortable after a little while. I'm like, I better put my mask back on and try to paint a more rosy picture, right? So in stage five, it's where your emotions are acknowledged and shared. You don't talk about like the trip that you just took to Mexico. You actually tell the truth. How am I doing? I'm doing terrible, right? The voice of the one without a mask is stage five. So then stage five moving to six is you start looking at the even bigger picture. You become aware of your ego, and your ego being your sense of self. And here's where you really are hoping to get past automatic programming and ways of being and responding like a programmed ego encapsulated robot becomes really challenged. You experience moments of freedom from your ego and separate self. I don't think that the questions that were asked were beyond ego and separate self. They were within the self realm, you know? So these questions I felt were from stage four or stage four wanting to move to five, or maybe even stage five, but stage five moving to six, it's like you go beyond your life basically, and start looking at the world from a bigger perspective. You have moments of freedom from ego and false self, separate self. Here's where you have compassion for yourself. And that's a big deal. And here's where you open more and more like a flower. So some voices here that I would facilitate with people are the nurturing mother or the nurturing father, like big, big mind, big heart, global consciousness. And then stage six is really interesting. You think, oh, you just get more and more in this realm, like of collective consciousness or free from ego, or you've transcended your ego. Actually, the opposite happens. Stage six, the ultimate level of ego development, is where you go back and you get yourself. your Christianness, your, you know, your ego, if it will. And it's like you have the self and you have the non-self, you know, the collective consciousness or something beyond that. And then there's the conscious apex. So you have human, you have being, and you become human being. So you're back to getting your ego. You're back to, for in my case, Kristen, right? But your ego is not your center. Your higher self, like up here, that includes your ego, is your center. And it's the full embodiment of what Mark Gaffney, very famous spiritual artist, calls unique self. Unique self. And it's all about being and witnessing yourself and other people, like being in the voice of the witness, being in the voice of cosmic consciousness that includes and embraces your own self, the witness, all views. This is the ultimate of what I teach. You know, I'm a flow specialist, being in flow with the 10,000 voices. Level 6 ego development is the free-flowing, seamless movement between all states of being, universal, cosmic, egoic, you name it, and having compassion for yourself and it all. This is where you have intimacy with all things. This is flow. Now, back to the questions. And I can just take a moment. Does anybody have any questions actually about everything that I've just outlined? Kirk, can you tell me if there's any questions?
Yeah, I believe Liz had a question for you.
Liz, do you want to unmute yourself and ask it?
Yes. So I actually just wrote it out for Kirk, but as you know, my mom passed away rather expectedly, I guess, beginning February, and I was on a skiing road trip, and, you know, I left that to go to Florida and sort of, you know, do stuff I needed to do. And I was just alone in the house, her house in Florida. And, you know, even when helped me synthesize our relationship and it, like positive things, I was not even able to like get through it without crying and deal with it. So after a couple weeks, I went back to the road trip, and actually skiing kind of blows some of this away. But I was analyzing my feelings. I think what I was doing was actually feeling my mom's pain. I'm not sure it was my pain. I was just feeling like, you know, there were things I could have done better in that last year until I had 24/7 caretakers telling me what to do and feeling all the things she had to deal with, getting married in the 50s and all the fucked up things they wanted women to do. And, you know, just like she did move beyond that, like hugely after my parents split up. But I'm just wondering the idea of identifying with someone else's pain as my own. Do you think that was a logical thing, or how would that tie into this?
The question of, was it a logical thing? I mean, feelings aren't logic, they're feelings, right? So it's not a logical thing, but maybe the question that you're asking is, was that okay? Or was that normal? Or was that, should I have resisted that? Or should I have embraced that? I mean, I think it sounds beautiful. And the person that asked the questions said that it's really, how do I navigate? So I want to bring back the original questions into your question. How do I navigate being married to somebody that has a lot of insecurities, which is kind of similar. It's like, we can't pretend that we don't affect each other emotionally. You know, we can't pretend that our mother and what she went through doesn't affect us even cosmically, not just emotionally. And We see all the time people who are depressed or have anxiety. Well, their mom had depression and anxiety, and their mom's mom had depression and anxiety. It's like, in many ways, it's almost even in our DNA. Like, whatever your mother feels, you're like genetically pre-programmed to feel yourself, cosmically pre-programmed, and also you just naturally will feel those things. What's so fascinating about what you're outlining is that you noticed it, though, that you woke up and realized that, oh, what I'm feeling is all the sadness that maybe your mother didn't feel, right? Maybe she was blocking it out. Your mother came from a generation of people who were very emotionally repressed. And so maybe the greatest gift you can give your mother on her behalf is to feel her emotions for her. And isn't that beautiful?
That's an amazing way. I mean, my mom's family, you can't imagine a more sweep it under the rug family. Like when we were talking about death rituals and my Irish dad, like I did a wake for my brother, and my husband said, "Well, how would your mother's family do a death thing?" And it's like, well, they probably would be pretending it wasn't colon cancer, thinking back to my grandfather. But yeah, that's a really interesting way to say it. And I will just say that, like, all when this was happening, I was thinking, I am so leaning into the pain and not doing cosmic bypass. And, I guess I just feel things really deeply and cry about them. And I mean, maybe that's like rebelling against my sweeping it under the rug family. But I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be congratulating myself that much. But I was feeling, like I was totally pushing through, living through it.
That's diving into the river of suck. And I mean, we can put a positive spin on all this stuff if positivity is part of the journey for you. Like, yes, you're doing this for your mother. And yes, you could have just gone to a bar and drunk a bunch of alcohol. Instead, you are like going into it. Like, be proud of yourself for A, being an empath, and B, just willingness to feel the emotions. And just notice how it's breaking you open to connection with your mother, for starters, but also connection with your own self, your own being, and connection to a bigger picture view of, I mean, the second you are getting out of your own limited personal view of the world and seeing things, just even from your mother's perspective, but the bigger perspective, all the suffering that goes on in the world, and for all women who were in the 50s and what they had to endure, like, it's like these are the things that are the gems, like the diamonds that we find in our lives. It's found in the sunsets, but it's also found in these moments of suck, right? And I would say, well, it's been said that burying your parents is one of the most important rites of passage you can ever go through. And what does that mean, burying your parents? Not literally, but I've heard it put, killing your parents too.
Oh my God.
Right, like, but not literally. My version would be like really truly finding a way to have compassion and consideration and love for your parents. I mean, that is the ultimate practice. Like, oh my gosh. Like, that's when the really good stuff shows up for you.
Thank you. I mean, I feel like I've crossed that bridge even before. I mean, I certainly over my life had shitloads of parent baggage, and I feel like I've forgiven them. But what you're saying has given me a good perspective. I mean, honestly, I got to St. Pete and I just wanted to go to that Super Bowl boat parade thing, but the pandemic,
And I'm going to
so I
stop you because
didn't.
we have a lot to
Okay.
get to.
Yes.
But let me
Thank
just
you.
say one more thing about what you just said, that forgiveness is not about, I'm sure you've all heard this, the other person. It's about forgiveness is about wishing that the past could have been any different than it has been. And or just letting go of the hope that the past could have been any different than it was. Taking it into modern day and back to the question about that I introduced, that I reintroduced about being married to somebody who's insecure. Now, can you find a way to not wish for her to be any different than who she is? And find a way to love her for who she is? And can you find a way, if she feels insecure, for her to borrow from your belief in her in order to feel great? Like, the ultimate measure of love is figuring out what somebody needs in order to feel loved and supported, and then giving it to them. And whether they can receive it or not, that's another conversation. Oftentimes they can't, or they don't believe it, or they start to kind of want to, extract more and more and more from you, like a leech. So it's also about boundaries, but just know that if your wife is insecure, that is like one of the greater opportunities you'll have to learn compassion and learning how to really love somebody. Right. And this is taking it back into these stages of ego development. Like, can you see that as we move up and up and up, it's like a spiral moving up higher, faster? It's like that's just what organically happens anyway. It's not like you have to force yourself to do this. And we're right back to grit and determination. Like, okay, I've got to really just do this thing for my wife, or I've got to really just, that's not what I'm talking about. This is just what organically shows up, like it did for Liz, if you just go into the river of suck. So, how do you do that? Well, in many ways, it's just like imagine, do I have a pen? I don't have a pen. Here's a piece of paper, right? How do you do it? Well, it's like, well, how do I do it? Here's this thing. Okay, drop my resistance, right? This is my resistance. And it's like, well, how do I do that? God, I'm just like so in resistance and stuck, stuck, stuck. No, it's either instantaneous. You just drop it and it's no big deal. Like, okay, I just dropped it. Now I'm fully in flow with the river of suck. I've dropped my need to be anything different than in the river of suck. Or you have to work on it. And how you can best work on it, and how you can go up these stages. And keep in mind, these are not linear. I'm going to say that again. And no one stage is better than another. But the 10,000 voices, their states of consciousness, they come for free. They're just going to show up, right? But stages of consciousness are actually earned. You actually have to work on them in order to cultivate them and have them show up in a bigger and bigger way in your life. And the best way that I found that you can work on going to the next level of your egoic development is through asking great questions. Now, asking great questions, which is what we're going to do with the rest of our time together, is in many ways the opposite of prayer. And I'm not one to usually talk about prayer. I'm not religious at all. But just notice that there was an element of prayer in these questions that were submitted. It's like, I want this. I want this. And that's how prayer usually shows up. It's like people pray because they want something, like, please heal my brother's cancer, please bring me success. Like, that's what we think of when we think of praying. It's like we're asking to be given something. And then we wonder why we don't get it, right? But the thing is, if the universe wanted your brother to heal from cancer, if the universe wanted your business to be success, if the universe wanted your wife to have higher self-esteem, then the universe would make that happen, right? That so pr prayer, I think, or asking for what you want, or trying to figure out how to make what you want happen, and then being upset if it doesn't happen, is not a great route. Also not a great route, grit, determination, all that, lot of effort, right? Much, much better is just to simplify, 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 and make your practice about asking great questions. When you ask yourself great questions, in fact, I always say that the bigness, or the most the how far you go in life is determined by the bigness of your questions, or how far you go with the questions that you ask yourself. And when you ask yourself great questions, that's when really things fall in place and things just come to you naturally. It's where these stages of ego development just organically unfold. And you just wake up more and more and more. And just over time, you just find that things have just changed dramatically, kind of like things have changed for me by me diving into the river of suck of the last year. So what we're going to do for the rest of our time together is ask some great questions. And I am going to give them in the form of small questions. We're going to start small, and then medium questions, and then larger questions. And I'd like for us to savor these together. So I'll ask a question and I'll probably be silent just for, I don't know, depending on my mood, 10 seconds, 30 seconds. And we'll have silence. And I just want you to go inside and not necessarily try to get an answer to these questions. You know, the beauty is found in just asking the questions. And if an answer comes to you, great. This is a way of tapping into your own wisdom. The Buddha is famous for a lot of things. One thing he's most famous for is that you possess all the wisdom inside yourself to become anything that you want to become. So, to the person that asked these questions, that sent this email to me with all these burning questions, like, you have the answer to all of them within you. And by asking these questions, I'm just hoping to help ignite that wisdom. And that's all this is. So here we go. Starting with some smaller questions. What is the feeling or experience that you're having today? It's almost 1 o'clock, Mountain Standard Time. How has the morning gone? How do you feel right now? Again, let the answer just come to you. Are you resisting whatever it is that you're feeling it, or are you embracing it right now? Can you just sit and listen right now? What actually is it that you're listening to? There's external noises. There's your internal world. Is there anything that's been trying to get your attention? Why has it been trying to get your attention? Medium questions. And Kirk, feel free to interrupt me if anybody has anything they want to say. Medium questions. Can I feel my senses? Supposedly, there's 11 million bits of sensory input that comes into our systems every second. Crazy, huh? What is the most prevalent sense, you know, like feeling that's coming in that's really obvious? And that might be a smaller question, taking it into the medium question realm. Can I feel my sixth sense right now? You don't even need to know what that is. Maybe you have a definition. Maybe you've heard that term before. Maybe you haven't. But can you feel it? How is it showing up? Has it been here all along, waiting for me to notice it? How do I know the universe is here with me right now? Or the river, if you will. How do I know the river is here with me right now? How is the universe guiding me right now? Where is the river taking me right now? As beautiful as those questions are, it's funny to think that they're only medium questions. What could be bigger than that, right? Large questions. Hey, universe, what is expected of me? Based on that, what are next steps for me right now in my life? You know, an example is, and this just happened organically yesterday and this morning for me. All these questions are just kind of always there in the back of my mind, especially because I'm going through such a tumultuous time. Yesterday, I was supposed to have a bunch of workers come to the house and do the outside facade of my house. And they didn't show up. And they were there the day before. And I'd just gotten home from Mexico. And I'm so busy right now. I have so much to do. I'm only home for a couple of days. And there were like six, seven guys here. And I've learned that the people that come to work on my house all know about my ski career. And they are all just thrilled about it. And they're always finding a way to bring it up. And they want to ask me questions. And they feel like it's really cool that they're working on the house of a professional skier. Most of these guys ski. It's like, you can imagine that brings with it a certain responsibility for me to really spend some time with the people that come to the house to work on it. And I forgot about that 2 days ago. And I just blew into the house. I was on the phone. They asked me where the hose was or something like that. I'm like, oh, it's right over there. And I just walked upstairs and I woke up this morning and I'm like, is it possible that the workers didn't show up yesterday because I was so like I didn't see them as people. I just saw them as, I mean, I didn't stop and pause and say hi to them and welcome to them to my home and thank you for working on my home and all of that. And they were really put off by that because I found out that these workers had never not shown up at a job before. And then I also got a lesson from my handyman who stopped working at the house because I had some renters here who treated him like he was invisible. And I thought, geez, you know, it's like all of a sudden, all these things kind of came into my world. And this morning I woke up at 7 a.m. hoping to fall back asleep. And I all of a sudden had a realization, is it possible these guys blew off working at my house because they were so put off because I didn't take time to see them and talk to them and welcome them into my house or whatever? Is it possible? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they just all got COVID or maybe they just got taken to another job that paid them better. But there's a possibility that they didn't come because they're like, screw her, what a bitch, right? And I may never know, but I did have that realization this morning at 7 a.m. I realized there's no way I'm falling back asleep, like how horrified I was at myself. And so It's like the small, not only just with the questions, but the realizations can be small, medium, and large. The small realization is that if I had really wanted the workers to come I should probably make it up to them, promise them a pizza party, or like certainly be kind or be more considerate, or I welcome them to my house and treat them like human beings instead of just people that I don't even see, who are just going to be working on my house. Like if I want my house to get done, I need to do that, right? That's the small realization. The medium realization is it's just the right way to be. There's a saying, the house is on fire. We must make haste. There's no time not to love. It doesn't matter how busy I am. Like the medium realization is that if somebody is helping me with something, I should always make a point to say hi and appreciate them in some small way. And then the larger realization from this at 7 a.m. this morning is, who do I want to be next? Like, that I would get to the point where I'm so busy and so frantic and so just blind that I can walk by a bunch of people and not that are helping me make my house beautiful and not even see them or not even acknowledge them. So then the bigger kind of realization is like, okay, is being kinder my path? Or is it just trying to prove something to my soon-to-be ex-husband, who's on the call, by the way, because he said that you need to be more kind, right? Is it maybe about proving to him that I can be more kind, or is it maybe about a performance, or would it actually be something that would feel authentic? Being more kind also, and Michael and I talked about this yesterday. Hi, Michael. Might also put me at risk to be have people take advantage of me. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm at parties and I'm kind and I'm a good listener and I'm making it all about them and no one asks me any questions back. And it's like, it starts to feel empty and lonely if you're just all about kindness and about being considerate of other people. And then when other people see you and are as invisible when you're there to help them, like I did with these workers. It makes you feel just sad. It's like I'm trying so hard to be kind, but nobody's being kind to me. Like, anyway, it brings up all these other existential questions, like what is my relationship with kindness in general? So back to these original questions that were submitted by one of the listeners. Instead of trying to move the needle in one day, maybe just start by asking a great primary question, like, if I stay on this path, am I going to be just fine? And I think the person that submitted these questions, the answer is no, right? Then maybe asking, and we can all do this together right now. I'll just ask a few more questions. What is one feeling or experience that you want to have before you die? You don't even have to put it into words, or you don't even have to find an answer. Just feel it in your heart. Like let the answer come to you in the form of a feeling. What subtle shift can you make to take you to this place, to where you want to go next? What is the shift that you can take or make right now? So that you could feel this. How can I help myself feel that feeling today? So that's it. Any questions?
Yeah, Kristen, Barbara had, if you want to look at the chat, Barbara had, there's a few questions in the chat.
Okay. Okay. Do we progress and regress between these stages? Absolutely, Barbara. Oh my gosh. they are not linear, like I keep saying. So I was recently involved in a kiteboarding entrepreneurs group. And they had like 1500 people, and they're all really famous, some famous, very successful people. And we would get invited to go on these kiteboarding trips together, but they could really only accommodate 120 people per event. And with 1500 people trying to get in, you had to make the cut. And next thing you know, I was reverting right back to high school adolescence, you know, just like, oh geez, I hope I'm cool enough to get invited to Maui, you know. And one time I wasn't. Like I actually bought my ticket to Maui and went there anticipating getting to attend this event, and I wasn't invited. And it was torture for me. I was right firmly back in adolescent stage three level of development. So yes, you can progress and regress between these stages. And in fact, a lot of people, for those of you that have worked with me privately or attended my ski camp, there's a thing that I facilitate called false self, the part of you that is pre-adolescence between that gets developed between age 2 and 12. False self is kind of like your kind of personality that you take on your whole life until you start to challenge it and question it. And if you're in an argument with another human being, boom, you are snapped back into stage two, false self, you know, in an instant. And anyone that's arguing, a husband, a wife, of, you know, strangers on the street, like is one false self paired against another false self. You're back in stage two ego development, and you're like children fighting with each other from that adolescent stage. So absolutely. Now, are people that have gone all the way, like Ken Wilber, you know, he's pretty firmly in stage six ego development all the time, but he's also has a lot of health issues, and he doesn't leave his apartment, and people come to him, and they're all there as seekers. And so he's not out there in the world getting challenged by getting mugged or, you know, divorce or what have you. But he is being challenged by his body just disintegrating. But you know, I think that we can also set up our lives so that we have a better chance of staying in one stage versus another. I always joke moving to Marin County, you know, that's where stage four transitioning to five and stage five people live, so that you at a party can say how you really feel, and, you know, and not have it be met with the rolling of eyes like, oh, that's a little bit more than I was anticipating. So, like we can set up our lives so that we have a better chance of staying more in a stage permanently, but no, it you bounce around, you bounce around. And yes, Amy, I will send a copy of these questions. A lot of them were ad-libbed, so I have no idea what they were. Maybe we can go through the video and come up with them. Any other questions?
Yes, Chris.
Barbara was wondering where can we read more about the ego stages?
I don't know. I haven't Googled it. Maybe we can all Google it afterwards, but Ken Wilber, Stages of Ego Development, see what you find. I learned about these in a workshop, where I was learning about unique self, the top of the apex. And this was my interpretation of the stages. And so a lot of this is I don't know how much is out there about these kinds of things, the stages. Sorry, I wish I knew more. Similar to ones from developmental psychology. Okay. Yeah. Are these Erikson? Are these from after the 60s?
They're pretty old, actually. So, but they've been kind of widely borrowed from and adapted in other ways. So that's kind of what jumped to my mind listening to that.
You know, pretty clear that Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, like got stage six, right? So there have been people documented that are there and have, and so there's this is obviously something that existed before the 60s, but I think that after the 60s, this is where things started happening this way en masse. There are more and more seekers on the planet every day, and a lot of people are seekers because of trauma because of going through just the devastation. Like right now, the world is just moving, happening so fast. We have these 10,000 states of being, just a class 5 rapids running through our system. They're no longer a slow trickle. And so all the issues, like Liz, your mom, like maybe her, she comes from a lifestyle that was a lot less turbulent and a lot less emotions, a lot less, you know, to deal with. And so I wrote in my book, like it used to be that, you know, you only had to deal with like, will it rain or won't it rain today? Or, you know, did I catch 2 fish or did I catch 3 fish today? And, you know, like fear, for example. And, but now we have so much going on, overpopulation, the internet, like we're interacting, there's just so much stimulus and just, it's a raging class 5 rapid. And so whatever issues that, maybe mom would have faced back then on a low grade level now are very, very heightened. And so it's actually the perfect design that is just forcing people, you know, to evolve. It's like, if people are so wrecked by their emotions that they're like, I have to do something, right? I have to become a seeker, even though I don't feel like it, I have to. Or, and oh, the other one thing that I want to say is that when you are at a different stage of ego development than your spouse, then that's when a lot of divorces happen too. Or when you decide to do the midlife edit. It's very rare to find somebody prior to age, let's say 40, that's moving beyond stage 4 ego development, it's kind of more about like success and making your mark in the world, professionally. Right. But it's very, it's rare to find somebody that's younger that's moving beyond, but we're actually starting to see it more and more just because life is so difficult for people. And we teenagers are now having existential emotional crises. And it's possible that they did back prior to the 60s as well, or back during your mother's era, Liz, but we don't have any data. We don't know, you know, and whatever data is there isn't readily shared and all that. But it's just interesting to look at your life from this big picture map. We can look at the past. We can look at, you know, where we are as individuals. We can look at other people and see where they are. And I will say one more thing about transitioning from stage 4 to 5 is that we're very judgmental of people who haven't, you know, the people who are still all about power and influence and the almighty dollar and success as what we used to define it as, because we feel like, oh my gosh, I've moved on. And so Ken Wilber calls it the 415 paradigm. You know, once we start to be seekers, we're like annoyed with people that aren't. That's why we have this great midlife edit where we purge toxic people out of our lives, or people who are not seekers as well. Once we get to be about 40 or so plus, I'm kind of speaking in circles now, but just these stages are a really good big picture map. And to look at the existential crisis that we face, like as, and being able to see them as a possible opportunity for us to go to the next level of our evolution, as long as we're willing to dive into the shitstorm of it. And then it's just a way to not only see yourself, but see where other people in your life are accordingly, and recognize your own judgments and delusions. That's why I love these stages so much. Okay, Glenn, how can I bridge the current work paradigm of stage 4 with the unique self in ways that allow for organic unfoldment? Organic unfoldment is, well, let me go back to the questions. I have to go find this document. So Glenn, I'll go through them one at a time. How can I rediscover the juice in life? If you feel no juice, just spend some time with no juice. How do I deal with loss and failure? Just dive into the fear, the loss, the pain of failure. spend some time with it. Fear of aging, dive into that, just sit with it. My four steps really work for that as well. Settling for, well, I guess this is all that life has to offer. Like if you were a private client, I would just say, let's sit as the voice of this is it. This is all I got, right? Right? And just sit there and feel it. Be curious about it. There was a safe that was for, you know, putting money and jewels in that was developed, I think it was in the 50s. It was that of a moldy cabbage, a plastic replica of a moldy cabbage. And there was a little door. And inside you would put money and jewels and close the door, put it in the refrigerator. Looks like a moldy cabbage, right? First of all, if a thief comes into the house, they're not going to look in the fridge for your money and jewels. And if they do look in the fridge, the last thing they're going to do is pick up the moldy cabbage. But this is about diving into the river of suck, right? Is about like being willing to pick up your moldy cabbages and spend some time with them. And then asking questions, right? And being curious enough about these questions that you actually find the doorway and inside of this river of suck, inside the loss, the failure, the fear, you know, the pain, all of that, you find jewels, you know, and money, not literally, but like insights and all. When I know there's more, but I'm tiptoeing towards the finish line, like just spend some time just fully acknowledging that you're tiptoeing and that you're like, there's the rabbit and the hare, you know, that's my new favorite private client facilitation. Like, allow me please to speak to the voice of the rabbit, you know, what, how does the story go? Like who wins the race in the end? Do they cross the finish line at the same time? Or, but just be curious about the hare in you, like the, and be curious about the rabbit and the tortoise. That's what I mean to say. Be curious about the rabbit, the hare in you, and then also be curious about the tortoise in you. Spend some time just sitting and being the tortoise. How can I gain clarity and have the courage to take bold steps? Well, courage is a willingness to feel fear. So just sit with your unwillingness to feel fear, if that's what is holding you back. That's what holds most people back. How can I gain clarity? Well, this is going to be really profound. So really listen to this. How do I gain clarity? Sit and realize how delusional you are. So whatever it is that you want, sit as the opposite of that. Like, I want to be successful. Sit and just be unsuccessful. Just feel what that feels like. Ask questions of that part of you. What's behind my propensity to quit? It's just an unwillingness to feel discomfort, usually. How do I move beyond stuck, stagnant, numb, on autopilot? Well, you don't. You just dive into stuck, stagnant, numb, on autopilot and just let the river of that suck take you wherever it's going to take you next. But the thing is, you do this consciously. You turn it into a practice. You turn it into like a practice of questions, of asking yourself, you know, not how do I get past this, right? But how can I just be in it? And then just naturally, organic, having this river take you where it wants to, which may be to a different place than you imagine. It might not take you to stage four ego development where you have power and success and money, all of that. It may take you into something even greater. And why not, are there any more? Okay, you're welcome. Maybe I'll just finish with my also current favorite analogy about asking questions and the beauty of asking questions and not necessarily looking for answers. It's just really is a practice of questions. And where I'm landing in the end is that of a greyhound. A greyhound is a dog, you know, and they race, right? I don't know if any of you have ever seen a greyhound race around a track, you know, they're paired against each other like horse races. And they're behind this kind of wall and they're ready to go, ready to go. And there's a rabbit out there, right? And then all of a sudden, boom, the gate goes down and the rabbit takes off And the greyhounds are racing around the track chasing this rabbit. And they're chasing the rabbit. And at first glance, you think, oh, those poor bastards, they're never going to catch that rabbit. And if they do catch the rabbit, they're going to realize it's not actually a rabbit. I don't know what it is. It's like a stuffed animal or something, right? Like, it seems pathetic. But round and round they go, round and round they go. Race is over. They don't catch the rabbit, but they're happy to do it again the next day and the next day. And at second glance, you realize that the greyhounds are having the time of their lives. It's like they're never actually catching what it is that they want, but they're having a great time pursuing it. So this is not about finding answers, or this is not about accomplishment, you know, like catching the rabbit or making the money or having the success or what have you, the relationship that you want. This is more about just being happy to go out there and just chasing, you know, whatever it is that you want every single day and not necessarily catching it. And of course, we're a lot more complicated than dogs, like asking great questions. What it is it that I'm actually chasing, right? That would be another great question. And not ever kind of arriving somewhere where you've caught the rabbit, but just being happy in the chase alone. So that's our practice today. Asking great questions, chasing the elusive rabbit, enjoying the process, diving into the river of suck, all of that, lots of analogies. Thank you guys. Thank you for being here today. And I'll see you next month.